Welcome to Upfront on the Voice of America. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. Now, since March of this year, when the World Health Organization declared COVID-19 as a global pandemic, almost 4 million people worldwide have contracted the disease. In Africa, the figure is much lower relative to other parts of the world. It is hard to give definitive figures since the numbers keep changing by hour and by day. But thus far, Africa is estimated to have around 42,000 infections, and of that, 1,800 people have died from COVID-19. In many African cities, life is slowly returning to normal after over a month under lockdown restrictions. There is cautious optimism that they might be out of the woodwork. But even as the economies reopen and people go back to work, governments are adopting a slow and gradual approach, calling for social distancing, requiring that people wear masks in public. However, as many African countries look to reopen their economies, organizations such as the World Health Organization, Africa Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, and the World Economic Forum have issued guidelines out of concern that opening up too quickly could entail a fresh wave of COVID-19 cases on the continent. Simon Marks reports from Addis Ababa.
With the coronavirus having thrown many African economies into a deep freeze, many governments are facing pressure to end lockdowns and travel restrictions so people can get back to work. But health experts say any country planning to reopen for business needs to do so gradually and based on science-based reasoning. In a new report, the WHO, Africa CDC, World Economic Forum and Vital Strategies, an organization that helps governments strengthen their public health systems, say governments should first open up vital sectors of their economies and only when the data show it is safe to do so. They say the key figures to watch are the number of coronavirus cases, the extent of testing and whether any outbreaks are accelerating. Matshidiso Moeti, the World Health Organization Regional Director for Africa, said in a video conference that authorities have to balance economic concerns with consideration of public health.
The economic impact of the pandemic is going to be great anyway, and the measures are merely sharpening and making that worse on the most vulnerable populations. So there needs to be a combination of gradually releasing, analyzing the most critical economic activities that are to continue, including in some countries, agriculture. We've been very concerned about the lockdowns and their impact on agriculture for the future, not only for now.
Many Africans remain anxious about the near future. People in 20 African countries were surveyed for the report. John Nkangasong, director of the Africa CDC, said the report showed that 44% of respondents said they felt they were at high personal risk to COVID-19, while nearly 70% of people acknowledged that food and water would be a problem if they were required to remain at home for 2 weeks. He had this advice for Nigeria as it looks to open up again.
They should continue to expand and strengthen their public health systems, especially the testing capacity, and not just in the major cities of Lagos and Abuja, but all through the entire country. That way they will be able to pick up cases as they emerge, isolate them, and trace their contacts. That's the only way you can be sure to continue to function while maintaining a good handle, a public health handle on the situation in the country.
Nkangasong said the report made three key recommendations to governments across Africa. First, while caseloads are low, build up public health systems to test, trace, isolate and treat cases. Second, monitor data on how public health and social distancing measures affect the spread of the virus. And last, convince communities to adapt health measures so that people's livelihoods can be protected. Simon Marks for VOA News, Addis Ababa.
In the past decade, parts of Western Africa went through a devastating health crisis. From 2013 to around 2016, thousands of people in Liberia, Guinea and Sierra Leone died from the Ebola epidemic that disrupted the lives of millions of people around the Manu River region. I was one of the reporters to cover that crisis, traveling to Freetown and Monrovia twice in 2015 and in 2016. On my trip, I met many young students who were forced to stay home in the kind of lockdown restriction that we are currently witnessing around the world. In the Liberian capital of Monrovia, I met young students like our next guest, Ahmed Kone, one of the founders of Smart Liberia, a youth-led social enterprise whose mission is to provide skills to young Liberians and opportunities for them to create social change. I wanted to know if there are some lessons that they learned during their last epidemic that they're using to fight COVID-19.
I mean, just like every other African society, or just like every other African nation, when the whole pandemic hit, when they did, the first case was confirmed in Liberia, the president came over air, and then just, you know, schools were closed immediately. And we function a little more like a, education is entrepreneurship, right? We do, of course, corporate work, but then we also, a large part of our activity is centered around education and teaching. Right. So we had to shut down, close our operations, you know, in adherence of the president's, you know, mandate. So that happened. You know, the whole operation just, you know, went online. And it's something we weren't really expecting. It took us by surprise. And it has essentially affected almost everything we do here as an organization. You're no longer getting funds. There's barely any money to like move things on online, right? Because that requires
the operational costs of running such an establishment. I imagine things are a little tight.
Let me ask you this, as a
person who went through the Ebola crisis, what are some of the things that you learned during that crisis? So that as a country that are helping you manage this crisis right now?
I think the first thing was, I mean, trust in the national leadership, because when Ebola really started, one of the things that people struggled with was trusting the national leadership, especially when you lived in a society where there is a bit of a disconnect between the people and their leaders. So whenever the leadership comes and speaks, people generally think this is a sham and this is not something real. This is what these people do all the time. The goal is to actually get money from international donors or from, you know, from the international community. So this is not real. But then it took the leadership to talk to like the traditional leaders and community leaders that people usually listen to, the churches and then the mosque. You know, to really, really get this message across. So when, but besides that, when people, it also took people seeing the casualties, you know, the victims of Ebola, to really understand this is actually real. This is no joke. When he started seeing people in the streets of Monrovia, walking and just falling, that was a reminder that, or that sent a signal that this is actually real and it's affecting real life and real people. So that also reinforces the message. But to really get people to believe, you had to talk to community leaders to convince their people. You had to talk to people who have already established trust among their community, be those leaders, religious leaders, or just, you know, civil society leaders in their community with an enormous amount of trust. So I think that helped us to like deal with this crisis early on. Because, I mean, I think Liberia really started preparing for this thing very, very early. I remember when I left Mauritius to come to Liberia, I was at the airport and most of the preventive measures were already being set up.
When was this? When did you leave Mauritius?
This was like March 6th. I entered Liberia
early March 6th. Okay.
Yeah, early March.
Okay.
So when I arrived at the airport, Liberia, because I had already passed through Johannesburg, I had passed through Nairobi Airport, and those people weren't really preparing as we were in Liberia, because you could see the hand watch, you know, buckets all around. People creating awareness and, you know.
I'm assuming because you guys have been there before.
Exactly.
But what about the healthcare infrastructure? One of the issues during the last health crisis, the Ebola health crisis, was that you had issues. There's some issues that we're seeing here right now in America, the, you know, lack of PPEs, from the standpoint of healthcare right now, do you feel that the country is much more prepared than it was last time when they were dealing with Ebola?
Well, I wouldn't really say that in terms of capacity and infrastructure and equipment that we are more prepared than we were during Ebola time. But I think in terms of awareness, in terms of just, you know, because most of these diseases or most of these infectious diseases are really controlled using awareness mechanism and not just the practical infrastructure. Because, I mean, you need to make sure people don't get sick in the first place.
Right.
Because regardless of how powerful your infrastructure is and how decent your healthcare system is, when it's overwhelmed, you can't really do anything.
Absolutely.
We're seeing what is happening in the U.S.
If everybody falls sick at the same time, they, you don't have the capacity to handle that. So you try to mitigate the infection.
Right, because there's only so much beds, you know. So some people make this argument that the U.S. Doesn't have a welfare system, or the welfare system is not really strong, so people are left vulnerable to, like, you know, die because of this, I mean, disease, because they don't have money. Mm-hmm. And they cannot check themselves into the different hospitals and so forth and so on. But then if you contrast that, the whole model with, like, what is happening in the UK, you really, really do realize that this thing is not really much about, you know, having the infrastructure and then the accessibility. It's about hospitals being overwhelmed. It's about it's about having everyone sick at the same time, or it's about having majority of the population sick at the same time. Because you can only have so much beds, you know. The number of people always exceeds the number of hospital beds.
Right.
So if everyone gets sick at the same time, the beds are, I mean, hospitals are overwhelmed, and then people die even if they're not supposed to die. So I think what Liberia has done really well has been this awareness thing, because we know we don't have the infrastructure.
Mm.
But one thing I think everyone has learned as a result of Ebola has been this whole prevention is better than cure. You better avoid this thing.
Right.
You need to be informed. You need to take the measures and not let this thing catch you by surprise. So
right.
I think in that area, Liberia has been a lot effective, so to speak. Mm.
Ahmed Kony is one of the founders of Smart Liberia, a youth-led social enterprise based in Monrovia, Liberia. Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Border Crossings.
Join host Larry London.
Larry London.
On Border Crossings, VOA's only worldwide music request hour.
Whoa.
Every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in for the biggest hits and amazing artists. Win prizes and get the latest news from exclusive celebrity interviews.
Ooh.
Send your requests to Facebook at VOA Larry London, Twitter at Border Crossings, or Instagram at Border Crossings VOA. Or call 202-619-2077 and have your favorite music played to the entire world.
Ah.
Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal, only on The Voice of America.
Welcome back. This is Upfront on The Voice of America. My name is Jackson Vunganya. Thank you so much for joining us. We continue with our show looking at how Africa is dealing with COVID-19. Uganda is one of the countries that is opening gradually. President Yoweri Museveni has come out with new measures aimed at easing the lockdown. Reporter Mugume Davis Rakarinji has more from Kampala.
In his address to the nation this Monday, President Museveni says he will, in two quotes, start slowly and carefully open up without undoing the achievements Uganda has had in mitigating the spread of coronavirus disease in the country. Consequently, the president added on the list of essential workers, including lawyers, mechanics, artisans, as well as insurance brokers.
Accordingly, we shall allow the wholesalers to open. However, the wholesalers will observe the social distancing rules. The seller must be 2 meters from the customer, but should be protected with a mask, and the customers must be 4 meters apart. Also allowed to open are the hardware shops, so that they sell factory goods, but also supply the construction sites.
Restaurants will only be allowed to provide takeaway services, and employers have been instructed to provide transport for their workers. The president says the lockdown has helped Uganda to make better preparations in the fight against the spread of COVID-19.
The local factories are either manufacturing the face masks and the personal protective equipment, or are in the process of manufacturing them. We now have the capacity to make a large number of masks. The local factories, 38 of them, are now making enough quantities of sanitizers, because that one also was a problem at the beginning.
He also said the government has opened many treatment and isolation centers, as well as collection points of testing samples for people suspected of coronavirus. All people will be mandated to wear masks whenever they appear in public.
We are going to make it mandatory for everybody who is not in his or her house to wear a cloth face mask covering all the time, the mouth and the nose. Why? It is because, remember, the virus rides on the droplets.
The president once again applauded citizens for adhering to government measures aimed at preventing the spread of coronavirus in the country. For VOA News, Aya Mugume, Davis Rwakari in Kampala, Uganda.
On the show today, we're looking at how the COVID-19 global pandemic is affecting young Africans, given that the majority of the continent are all under the age of 25. Ahmed Kony is one of the founders of Smart Liberia, a youth-led social enterprise based in Monrovia.
What are some of the parallels between COVID-19 and Ebola in terms of how people understand it? Is there fear among the population like there was last time? And I also wanted to ask you about the lockdown and the stay-at-home orders. You know, everywhere people going through these restrictions, stay-at-home restrictions, social distancing restrictions. You guys have been through that before. Are you coming with an understanding or with better experience of what it is to stay at home and socially distance?
Well, you know, it's to some extent, yes. Not entirely though, because we're human being by nature, it's a stubborn creature, you know. And Liberians in particular, we are also very stubborn. This is why you have security people out there just making sure people obey and, you know, abide by the rules of the that dictate the current, you know, situation or that dictate the current, happening in Liberia. So apart from that, though, because of the Ebola experience, I think most people know that this is real. We have an invincible enemy, and the only way to stay protected and safe is to abide by what you're told by our national leaders who are communicating through religious leaders and community leaders, yeah? And because people didn't do that when Ebola hit, most people died because of the virus. So now, and we saw that, right? So this is like, we saw that, and that has really informed the way people have responded to this whole coronavirus situation. But
was it easier to bridge that? Was it easier to bridge that trust gap between the population and the government, given that everybody was going through it at the same time? It's easier when you see lockdowns taking place, say in Kigali or in Nairobi or in Cape Town, and not just in Monrovia. People realizing that we're in it together. Was it a little easier? Was it easier for people to understand that? Or to gain trust?
Yes, it was. It really, really was. Especially when this thing was seen, when people saw this thing on their screens, say, for instance, in other cities like Kigali or Nairobi or even the US or Europe. Right, this thing was happening all across the globe at once. So people, that also influenced how people behave. It affected people's response to this whole stay at home or the, you know, or the national lockdown. It did. It did have some influence.
Is there a deja vu like feeling for you guys? Like, we've gone through this before. We know what it feels like. We know what it is to live in a situation where you're constantly worried or scared that you might contract a deadly virus?
Yeah, I mean, there is. I mean, me personally, every single day that I leave the house, because I stay a different place, even though, and just come to like the office every now and then, but every single day you leave your home or your house, there's always that fear. Where did I mean, have I been exposed? Did I interact with too many people? There's always that concern, and there's always that fear that
you take public transportation into the city?
Nope, I don't.
Okay, so you
I try to avoid public transportation.
Ahmed Kony is one of the founders of Smart Liberia, a youth-led social enterprise based in Monrovia. Liberia is the latest African country to accept the use of an alleged coronavirus treatment from Madagascar. Liberian President George Weah received an initial consignment of the Madagasy anti-COVID-19 herb in Monrovia earlier this week, after he said that he agrees with Madagascan President Andry Nirina Rajoelina to test the alleged treatment. President Weah expressed confidence in Africa's potential to finding solutions to the global pandemic. Moses Guazil reports from Monrovia.
While scientists around the globe are clamoring to find a possible cure for the coronavirus pandemic, it appears more and more African countries are inclined to accepting an alleged Madagascar herb as a possible cure for the COVID-19. Liberia has become the latest African country to approve the use of the Madagascar herb, which has not yet been approved by the World Health Organization. President George Weah received the first consignment of the Madagascar anti-COVID-19 herb yesterday, Monday, at the Rabat International Airport.
My good friend, Sissoko Ambalo, person in the South, called me 2 days ago and told me he was sending coronavirus preventive and cure message. And I'm glad that he dispatched his people.
The Liberian leader commended the president and people of Madagascar for taking the lead in finding what he called preventive and curable medicine for the novel coronavirus.
We want to thank the people of Madagascar and His Excellency Andreas Rajoelina for his goodwill to our country. And we hope that there will be few those that are affected by coronavirus.
The World Health Organization has since dismissed claims that the Madagascar herbal tonic produced and cured COVID-19 patients. But Liberia Minister of State Nathaniel Magill defended why the alleged Madagascar herbal treatment should be given a chance. Magill says people in rural areas in Africa have successfully treated illnesses with herbs.
They're taking African herbs. And we are African, we believe in our traditional medicine. And so this is good. Right now, you go in all the people who they're drinking lime tea, they're drinking this, they're boiling this, they're doing that. And they're taking medicine. So these are good things. But we believe in our traditional herbs.
Liberia has now accumulated 158 confirmed COVID-19 cases with 18 deaths and 58 recoveries. President Weah has meanwhile issued a 60-day state of emergency that is ongoing. Moses Gazel, VOA News, Monrovia.
On the other side of the continent, off of the southeast coast of Africa, is the beautiful island nation of Mauritius. It is where Kenyan social entrepreneur Michael Mutie was in the middle of his graduation month when the local government called for lockdown restrictions. I caught up with him as he prepared to eat his dinner.
I see you're eating right now. That means you can go out and buy food, right? how is the lockdown? This is what, third week for you too?
I think this is the part where you start feeling sick. You start feeling like something is not right.
Yeah.
I don't think human beings were made for confinement.
You're having dinner? Is it dinner time right now?
Yeah, I have my food here.
What do you think?
No, I have a very interesting dish. I'd rather not show.
can you describe it?
Those African high school dishes, you know, the guys who want to get a lot of food.
Is it lockdown food? I just want to know if it's lockdown. Is this the kind of food you would eat on a regular day, or you've had to improvise?
No way, because I'm having canned fish and rice.
Okay, I see. That's totally lockdown food.
Yeah.
And anything that is dry or canned that has you know, the fingerprints of lockdown all over it. It's 9 p.m. When did you buy the food? Where did you buy the food?
So we shop once a week. Mauritius has now rolled out an alphabetical order in terms of, you know, how you can shop. And the reason for that is because Mauritius went from 1 week where, you know, people were advised to self-isolate, keep indoors, try and limit the movement, to a week of curfew, you know, you can only be outside between this and this time. And then the next week, it was a mandatory lockdown where even essential business providers were asked to shut down. And that was a week where we were seeing the skyrocket in terms of the number of positive cases being discovered on the island. And then from that, now they released the lockdown a bit. I mean, it wasn't as strict, so now they allowed for people to be able to go and shop, but following certain rules. You know, the 2 meter or 1 meter spacing between people, it's mandatory if you're going to shop to wear a mask. It's mandatory to sanitize your hands before you get into a supermarket. And it's crazy because the first day they allowed people to go out, people had not shopped for about a week.
You had a rush.
There was a rush.
The grocery aisles and stuff. So how do you know that your name has come up in the sequence? Did they text you? Did they send you an email? Did they call on the radio? How are they communicating these instructions to the public?
A lot is done online. So they have, I think, daily or every 2 days press conference, and you have updates. So I have a couple of friends who are in media, and because a lot of the information that is shared across Mauritius being a predominantly French-speaking country, and I've done a, you know, not so good job with my French. Mm. So I have a friend who's a journalist who gets to interpret what is being said.
So for you, you have another layer, is the language barrier now. So you have to figure out what you're saying. So you talked about how these instructions are mostly online. What is the internet penetration like then on the island?
It's actually really good. I think they've got pretty much, it's a small island. You can actually drive around the entire island in one day.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the internet coverage, they have about 3 telecoms provider, and they've done a good job covering the island with internet. They even have 5G. So, they're well covered in terms of internet. So in terms of accessing information, they put it out on a daily. And that's how we get to know how many new cases are there, how many are positive, how many have been imported, how many were local. So the shopping information is on government websites as well. And you also have some private websites that have posted this information after the press conferences by the prime minister or by the concerned officials. So they're subdivided, I think, in 3 groups, A to, I don't know, F. I haven't followed it, because that's for people who want to go shop in supermarkets, in big supermarkets.
Right.
If you want to shop in small, you know, village roadside shops, some have been allowed to operate, you don't really need to follow that alphabetical order.
Okay, so there's an ad hoc process to that one, but for the other one... Okay, so what are people shopping here in America when the lockdown started, or before the lockdown started, people were... rushing to buy toilet paper. What is the one item that people are rushing to buy over there?
Toilet paper is not a big deal, surprisingly. I don't know why other countries, I remember Australia, you had a big deal with toilet paper.
I thought only America were...
No, I mean, the one I saw was from Australia, so I didn't see, or maybe I saw a video from the US, but toilet paper is not an issue. In terms of food, rice.
Mm.
Rice. A big deal because
rice is a staple on the island.
Yeah. A lot of rice.
How has that affected the price of rice? There's no foodstuff in most of African countries. The prices have gone up. How has that affected, for example, the price of rice on the island?
So initially, when the panic shopping started, some people tweaked their prices, but then soon. I think a few days into it, the government issued a regulation that people should not inflate prices for commodities.
And with that, we come to the end of our show today. I want to thank my guests, Michael Moutier in Mauritius and Ahmed Kony in Monrovia, Liberia. Until next time, I wish you health and blessings.